welcome to another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly. The Yes to Life show is named after the UK charity Yes to Life that's been helping people with cancer to access the benefits of integrative medicine for well over a decade. Today's show is a first for the Yes to Life show, as we're going to be looking at childhood cancer, an increasingly common occurrence that far too many families are faced with. My guest today is an inspirational American surgeon, Kurt Newman, MD, who is the author of Healing Children and the president and CEO of the Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C. The quality of the sound over the line for this interview is what might be called suboptimal, but Dr. Newman's compassionate message about childcare comes through loud and clear, so do hang in there. I'm really pleased to be able to talk to you today.
Well, it's great to be with you too, Robin.
So you're a paediatric surgeon with long experience of doing your best to help children through probably some of the toughest of circumstances. I've got a copy of your book, Healing Children, in front of me. Unfortunately, I've not had it long enough to actually read it properly, but I have had a quick look through, and even that leads me to be pretty sure we're going to have a great talk today.
Thank you. I have been a surgeon for most of my career, 33 years, but the book starts actually with my own experience as a patient when I was in medical school.
Hmm. Okay, well look, I've got a lot of questions for you. We're going to have to see how far we get with them. I'm someone whose daughter went through cancer at age 9, again at 13, and again as a young woman of 22. So I've both seen and experienced firsthand the extraordinary resilience of children, the enormous stresses that having a sick child can place on a family, and the inspiring spirit that such a challenge can inspire in them. Serious childhood illness is a world that most families would hope never to visit, or certainly never to return to. You've chosen to make this world your home for decades. Why?
Well, I chose to go into medicine back in university days when I just enjoyed the combination of science, of helping people, and having a career in that. But it was my own experience as a medical student when I discovered that I myself had cancer that really propelled me into deciding to go into surgery first because I hadn't really considered that before, but I saw the incredible impact that my own surgeon had on me as a young person. I was 24 years old or so, and the experience of surgery and being cured of what was a thyroid cancer just really was amazing to me, and I wanted to do that for other people. So I shifted my career from being wanting to go into cardiology to take care of hearts to making surgery and having an impact that way. I didn't really discover the world of pediatric medicine until I was training in surgery, and pediatric surgery itself is a fairly new specialty in the last 40, 50 years. But I was just very attracted to the world of pediatric medicine, children's hospitals, pediatric specialists. One of the things I found that was completely counterintuitive, and even to this day, people say, well, you work at a children's hospital, it must be very depressing, it must be really discouraging to go to work. And actually, it's quite the opposite. I found that working with children and their families, it was inspiring that the children had so much courage. And in most cases, things turn out well, a spirit at the hospital of fun, it's almost a happy place. It's really amazing. And I think it has to do with the personality of children, that resilience, that courage, even when things aren't going well or don't turn out well. So that whole world just really attracted me to be part of it, and I decided to go into pediatric surgery.
So it's interesting that early experience of yours of actually having cancer and the difference to your life that the surgeon made really inspired you.
It did. I mean, here I was a cancer patient in my own medical school, and just having that experience and the interactions with people informed the rest of my career and how I thought about medicine. There's nothing like being on an operating room table and having your friends around, or being on a ward as a 24-year-old and the other patients are all elderly, to have these different feelings and really want to make a point with my own patients as I went along, of always trying to think about how they viewed things and what could we do to make their experience better. It's very so different than coming from the perspective of being the doctor or the nurse, but to put yourself in the patient's shoes. So, and I remember my own surgeon had cancer himself and had incredibly the same operation I'd had, and he pulled down his shirt and unbuttoned it to show me his scar. That was incredible, but it was so inspiring to me, because I remember him saying to me, look, you know, this isn't the worst thing. You're going to have a whole long life ahead of you, just like me. And so just taking that perspective, being more vulnerable to the patients and families and sharing, there are so many different dimensions of having been a patient that informed how I thought about things. So it was not anything anybody would ever want to go through by choice, but it became really a priceless part of the experience that I had that I think made me a better doctor.
So I think it'd be fair to say, from the sound of it, that this was kind of foundational to the whole course of your career.
It was. I mean, I would have been a perfectly happy doctor if this hadn't happened to me, and I would have probably been a cardiologist, but the fact that it did happen and then became one of the things I could bring to the care of children and families, in my case, was foundational. And it's really been a major part of what I could bring first as a surgeon and now as a CEO of a children's hospital.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, that's focused us straight away very much on cancer, which, as you know, is the subject of the Yes to Life show. Back in the early 90s, when my daughter was first diagnosed, they'd only just begun to realize that treating children as small adults with cancer didn't work, and it was never going to. Can you tell us a bit about the differences and what this means about the way that the children are treated?
Well, I think one of the first things that we all recognize and should recognize is that children are different than adults, and the types of cancers that children have are very different from adults. It's much more common in terms of having a blood cancer like leukemia or a brain tumor than, say, in adults, where it's colon cancer and lung cancer and some of the other more common cancers. So that straight away, the types of cancers are different. And just the way they're treated, and then the types of chemotherapy and surgery and the combinations for the different types of cancer are different. And then the responses of the children themselves are different. They're much more resilient. Their tissues are grow and develop differently, and so that we can take advantage of some of those different types of responses that children have. And then I think we always need to be aware of the psychology of children and their as they develop, and that, you know, an 8-year-old is different than a 12-year-old, a 16-year-old. It seems so plain and so obvious, but we need to really develop treatment plans and experiences for babies, for older children, for teenagers that are different from one another. So the whole world of treating children and families where the cancer is the diagnosis is extremely different than the adult world.
Mm. Yeah, it's no good coming up with a treatment plan that the child simply won't tolerate, is it, because of their age?
It requires much more. It's not a cookie cutter approach where you know there's a standard recipe. There are principles and there's trials and protocols, and one of the great things about the whole area of childhood cancer is that there has been quite a bit of success in improving the results in many of the cancers because there are these trials and protocols, and there's new things happening all the time. But yet, there are still cancers that are not well treated. There are lots of side effects, even with the when things go well and we cure the cancer, there can be long-lasting side effects. So there's so much more to do. But my experience just over my career is to see a lot of great improvements and success for many of the children undergoing cancer treatment. In the book, I talk about a young man I took care of who had a liver cancer, which was one of the worst types of liver cancer. He was playing basketball when he got hit in the side and had internal bleeding and went into shock, and it turned out it was from a big liver cancer that had spread throughout his abdomen and the rest of his body. And his survival, he was probably about 15 years old at the time, and his survival would have been, on the statistics, less than 10%. But we operated on him to see what we could do, and we removed 99% of the cancer, and half of his liver was part of that. Well, I left that operating room feeling very defeated because, you know, with cancer, getting 99% isn't enough. And we removed everything we could see, but we knew that this was a very tough situation because it was likely to come back. So he took it in stride. His family was just so involved and supportive of him, and he started on chemotherapy, and within 5 months or so, the kid had bounced back to where he had made his high school baseball team. Wow. And he was still getting chemotherapy, and we operated on him later to see if there was any cancer left, and it was completely gone, and his liver had grown back, and he finished high school. And then I saw a photograph of him that he sent me where he was carrying the torch in the Olympic parade. And then I just got a call from him where he'd gotten engaged and is working in business. And so it's the kind of thing. Here was a situation from the beginning, had the worst statistics. But this young man, you just never want to underestimate kids and their tissues, how they bounce back, their spirit. And there's just some things we don't know. And he was able to beat it and is going to go on to live a long and healthy life, going from a situation where it looked like he really had no chance at all. So there's so much we just don't know. And there, when you combine that with all of the great research that's going on, the prospects for the future are very, very, very positive. That doesn't mean that there are not situations now, though, where we can't do enough and where things don't turn out as good as we would want them to. And in many ways, that inspires us to work even harder to find cures to help the families that are struggling with these very tough situations.
Well, that's a very inspiring story, and I think you're right. It's a testimony to just what young people are capable of. Their bodies are just amazing things, aren't they?
They are, and that's what keeps many of us coming back, because we want to try and harness that, that biology, that spirit to get these great outcomes. But then on the other side, we want to try and do more to find out and help the kids that currently we're not helping enough. So that's one of the great inspiring sides of pediatric medicine, where you have these specialists, the nurses, the researchers that are just so committed. But it's a team effort, too, with the families and with all of the other people that go into it, because it takes a team to get the best results.
That's very important. I'd like to talk about that a bit more later. So I wanted to ask, becoming the parent of a child with cancer, it's an extremely steep learning curve. So relying on the expertise of others is essential. But how can parents evaluate who the right people are for this crucial role?
The way I answer that is that as a parent, you have to get educated and be an advocate for your own children. And most of us wouldn't want to try and figure that out in the middle of a crisis. And so in the book, I try and give insights to parents to how to prepare for just generally things ahead of time. I think that always works out well, so that you have a plan in case of an emergency. You know where the emergency department would be for that specializes in children. You don't want to try and do that type of research in the middle of a crisis. So you want to try and sort that out with the pediatrician or the nearest pediatric specialty hospital ahead of time, because many times what people don't know is that not all hospitals are really well equipped to take care of children. So it's best to get that sort of education, that plan, what you're going to do in certain situations ahead of time. Now with cancer, it's a little bit different, because nobody is expecting their child to have cancer.
Right.
So when you're in that situation where that's being suspected, there are specialists and specialty hospitals that's what they do. They take care of children with cancer, and you want to be in one of those hospitals with those specialists. This is not a time where you want to have people that are only doing that as part of their practice, where mostly they take care of adults or whatever. You want to be one of the top places. And so there are websites and resources to find out where that is, because the other side of it is you want to have access to the latest treatment, to the latest research, because it's changing all the time. So I would really advocate hard that parents should be persistent. They should ask questions. They should ask, well, where's the best place? Who has the most experience? What are the results? This is not a time to be shy, but it's a time to really become an advocate for your child, because you want to be in the place where you get the best results. And that would be a specialized center that takes care of children with cancer, because they're going to have the resources, not just for the science and for the medical care, but they're going to have the resources for the psychology and for the art, the music, the experience that you also want for your child while he or she is going through treatment.
That's important, isn't it? So you're saying that there's likely to be a much better atmosphere for giving the best to children.
I can't emphasize enough that atmosphere, because when you're having treatment for cancer, it can be a long, drawn-out affair with a lot of pain involved and discomfort. And also, many times, there's situations where families are split because of there's other children at home, and there's a loneliness, and the children are away from their friends. Or with things like bone marrow transplant, you're in the hospital for a long time and on isolation. So the experience that child has, the best would be to recreate and maintain their childhood experience, all the things that they enjoy as close to as possible, so that there's school, there's play, there's music, art, there's humor, so that the children are having an experience that that helps their healing, because it's my belief that all of that goes into improving the healing and the recovery and the adjustment. And because children are so resilient, we want to take advantage of their, you know, their spirit and their ability to be positive and optimistic. We want to try and tap into that, because it's such a big part of being a child, and it's, I think, a big part of the healing experience.
Mm. Well, that's a great message. Really important. So, some parents clearly have got a bit of a knack for getting the best from a medical team, while others get scant attention or sometimes even worse. Have you got any suggestions for ways to maximize the support and the expertise of medical staff?
Well, I think the key is trying to create a team. And I think being partners with the medical team and trying to look at things just as I advocate that the medical team look at things through the parent and the child's eyes, the patient's eyes, I think it's important for parents to also understand the pressures and the dynamics on the other side of the equation with the doctors and nurses. Mm. And create some understanding and some mutual understanding, and realize that together and sharing in the whole process, there's going to be a better outcome for the child. Now, obviously, there's times where there's disagreement or friction, but it's been my experience that when people are honest with one another, when there's a transparency about what's happening, you get the best results. And as a surgeon, I learned over the years to trust the parents and trust the mothers in particular, because it was often their instincts were spot on. And when I didn't quite trust the instinct of the mothers, or the sometimes the fathers, but really the mothers. But I regretted it, and so that teamwork to the best degree that you can create that bond, it's going to be good for the children.
Well, look, I hope there's some doctors listening to what you're saying, because one of the things that I experienced far, far too often on the wards were parents who've had their concerns ignored, and they've even been labelled as neurotic, only to be proved exactly spot on much further down the line, often far too late to be able to help. It's a terribly difficult situation when doctors think they know best, and it turns out actually they didn't.
I think that culture is changing, and I think that's one of the great things about medicine, is that it's a dynamic profession, and I really do think that culture is changing. I would say that for the parents, being an advocate for your child, you should never regret that, because you have the best understanding of the psychology and the situation of that child. But I think there also requires mutual respect, and frequently the physicians are uneasy. Maybe they don't have all the answers, and I think trying to create that shared vulnerability about trying to find what's best for an individual child can bring things, can bring people together. I think it is unfortunate when people don't recognize and have the mutual respect in what they bring together to create a team. And I think that is an opportunity that's lost. So to the degree where you can create that mutual trust, that shared commitment to a good outcome, I think the parents, the physicians, the nurses, that's the best outcome of all. And it really, I think, is the most, when I've had those scenarios, even in the toughest situations with children that were in a terminal situation, it's one of the most rewarding. I remember that we had a child at our hospital who was in a terminal situation, and she knew it. She was 16. Her family knew it. They knew that she didn't have much time left. Her last wish really was to be outside one more time and be in the sunshine one more time. Now, we didn't have a great setup, a great scenario to get her outside. She was on had a lot of technology and was on a lot of different supporting machines and things. But the nurses and engineers figured out a way to get her outside. And she passed away not long after that. The parents were so grateful that we had made that effort, and the child herself was so grateful. It made a lasting impact on all of us that we could have just said, no, it's not possible, that we can't do that, that's not safe, that's dangerous. But it inspired us to try and create what we now call a healing garden that we set up to have all the technology so that we could plug the machines in into an outdoor space, and that other children that might be in that situation, or just children and families in general, could get outside, get outdoors. And it's had a transformational effect just from that one child and respecting her wishes, and it, I carry that with me to this day. So that is the experience we would all want for our own children. So a lot of it is trying to put yourself, if you're a doctor, try to put yourself in that parent's shoes. And also the other way around, if you're a parent, you know, try and understand where the doctor's coming from. And I think when we do that, we find the common ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, that's a really inspiring story, and you're right, that's an ideal scenario. One of the things I wanted to ask about, which can affect that deeply, is as an adult, of course, you can team up with your medical team and in a consenting way. As a child, it's your parents who are responsible for you generally, until it comes to a life-threatening situation, in which case they're actually in the hands of doctors, not the parents. And it's kind of easy to see how this makes complete sense to doctors with long training and experience, but of course it can come as a massive shock to many parents who previously believed that their children were their responsibility. So with this responsibility, of course, on your part, goes a huge burden of effectively playing God. It doesn't always go right, does it? I believe the situation's the same in the US. What's it like from your side to be in this position?
Well, each situation is different, and I think it is a tremendous responsibility to have the knowledge of the science and the medicine. But I think the interests of the children have to be shared and with the parents, and it's not an either or scenario. I think the parents frequently know best their children and their family and their own spiritual situations, and I think that has to be a major consideration, as well as the medicine and the science. So in the best circumstances, that comes together and there is a consensus situation. Mm. Obviously, there are times where it's very difficult to know what's best, and I think, you know, there's no right answer. I think the medical establishment and the family and every just has to try and sort through to what's the best for that individual child. So these are not easy, but I think the wishes and the life and trying to find the best potential for a child is where we all want to come out.
Mm. Well, it's heartening to hear you speak that way. I mean, there have been these very high profile cases in recent years in the UK, where there's been direct conflict between the treatment desired by the parents and by the hospital, and literally they've done a runner and gone abroad in order to give the child the treatment that they wanted, which has turned out well in the particular case I'm thinking about. But so it's certainly, if you have a sort of doctor as God situation, there's likely to be conflict. But the kind of scenario you've just described, which is one which is much more reasoned and much more accounting of both sides of the picture, is clearly much more likely to end up with one where there's a proper consensus and everybody can work together.
I think, you know, it's hard to apply a rule across the board, and every situation it's an individual situation, and I'm sure, in these difficult situations, everyone's trying to figure out what's best. But the ideal is for people to come together, the parents, the child, whoever else is involved on the family side, with the physicians, the nurses, and the medical establishment, to try and find that consensus. I think with medical technology changing. The rules are not always so clear. There's new treatments and research happening. What, you know, in the past would have been a situation that was completely incurable or unresolvable, or now there's things are happening and the frontiers are moving quickly in terms of genetic research, new pharmaceuticals, new technologies. So I think we the key that I found over the years is to try and be humble because you just there's so much we don't know, and we want to try and find the best solutions. Sometimes they're unhappy, but find the best solutions that we can for these really difficult difficult scenarios. And there's no magic bullet for each situation. It's just very complex and very individualized.
Well, I said at the outset that I thought from looking at your book we were going to have a good talk today. To me, that's just so heartening to hear a doctor expressing that kind of view of actually being focused on the fact that so much that we don't know, and that thinking you know best in all situations is kind of like a recipe for disaster in many cases. That is the reality of the situations, and of course you can meet in that reality with the parents.
I think that's right. Many times it takes some time for people to understand the and it takes time for parents to understand the complexity and the science and the of a situation, and they need time to process that through to come and many times come to the same conclusion that the doctors and nurses and the medical establishment has, but on the other hand, they're trying to be the best advocate for their children, and after all, they're going to be the ones that have to live with the with different decisions that are made.
Yes.
I think it's also true that we don't want to be unrealistic and to offer false hope when there, when there just isn't a possibility of success. So, but I think if we step back and look at there's so much great hope and promise, and in the research we're doing, to find new cures, to find ways of preventing disease, to find ways of identifying things early so we can start treatment early. For example, over 20% of children will have some type of mental or behavioral health issue in their lifetime as a child. So there's so much more we can do on that front to identify whether it's through genetics or just basic diagnosis that children are having issues, and then get them proper treatment. I think the future is bright for preventing a lot of the adult diseases, and maybe it's cancer that we learn how to prevent by genetic identification, or maybe it's heart disease. This is a time, and when I am telling people, instead of cutting back on resources and the U.S. and coverage for children or whatever, it's actually a time we ought to be putting more investments in, because we want to help our children reach their full potential and avoid these diseases, and when they have them, get the best treatments possible.
Okay. So I'd like to move across slightly to, you know, Yes to Life is all about promoting access to integrative medicine, which is much further ahead in the US than it is here. Cancer can induce feelings of helplessness in any of us, but particularly for parents as their child gets whisked away to a strange world of dangerous procedures, and it's a world with its own language, its own hierarchy, its rules and regulations. And on the face of it, it can seem like there's little for parents to do other than suffer through it all, and it can often seem that they are just another problem for the hospital to manage. But the truth is, of course, that there are a wealth of ways that parents can support their child if they're prepared to learn and to think outside the box. So what are termed as lifestyle interventions are proving to be more and more important to recovery, and this is just as true for children, of course. Do you have an opinion of the role of things like nutrition and activity on a child's recovery from cancer?
Well, I think to get the best outcome for children, you have to look beyond the medical care, and it really is important, the entire experience, whether it's nutrition, which is so critically important to healing and making sure that all of the tissues, all of the side effects, that the body, that the child's body has everything they need to heal from the treatment. But at the same time, we need to remember that children are growing, so that they need they need nutrition and healthy nutrition for that side of things as well. And then I think we need to also be thinking about their development, their mind, their brain, and all of the things they need, whether it's music, art, play, because we want them to have a healthy outlook. So it's a, I think the support that the hospital can give to the children and also to the family, because frequently there's siblings that they also are, in a sense, undergoing the treatment. So we want them to have the support that they need. I think what a lot of parents don't realize is how much is available, but frequently has to be advocated for. And there's lots and lots of resources that are available either through the hospital or from the community or from patient advocacy groups. There's groups that parents that have been through the same thing. All of those things are accessible, but sometimes it requires pushing for access to them. Seems like it ought to be easy, but often it's not. But I don't think parents should be shy about pushing for those resources for their children, because they're so critical to the entire healing process.
Right. So yeah, my feeling is it's very important from two points of view, really, that the parents do this. One is that it gives them an important role to play, and the second one is, of course, it does matter to the child as well.
I think that's right, and I think we underestimate the desire and need for parents to have a role to play, so they're not just sitting on the sidelines, but they're actively involved in the care of their own children. And I find it an important part of the success when you have parents that get involved like that. I want to, I think it's really good to have parents that want to provide that kind of input and energy for their children.
Okay, so maybe one last thing, we've just got time. I'd like to ask you about a specific, which is the ways that you as a doctor talk to children of different ages about difficult subjects. It seems to me this is a bit of an art that some few doctors excel in, and one that at best can very quickly build a child's sense of being in safe and caring hands. Do you want to say a little bit about this?
Well, I've found over the years that it's best to share what I'm feeling and thinking with a family and with a child. And I remember my own situation and look at it through that lens about how I felt. Obviously, I was in my 20s, but how I felt when the surgeon shared his own situation with me. And so that over the years, I've tried to, you know, modulate that to the age of a child or whatever. But I found that when there were times where we were trying to shield or not share with a child some things that, that we knew, either as the surgeon or as the parents, inevitably the children actually really knew what was going on. And by not sharing things in an honest way, we created a divide because they could sense that we weren't being honest. And I think that was always an uncomfortable situation. I mean, children really can see through a lot of things. And so to the degree that in an age-appropriate way, you can share the scenario or the situation or what's happening with children, with families in general, I think it creates that team, it creates that sort of shared and mutual approach of honesty and transparency that really is the most effective. And then when we don't do that, it just feels false, and it makes it hard to pull together to get the result we want. So even though it's complex and sometimes difficult and tricky, I think those transparent and honest conversations are the best.
Great. Well, I'm very much with you there. It sounds like, you know, that kind of talking down to children in a rather unreal way is, as you say, a way of making them feel, well, untrusting of the circumstances.
I think that's true. I think that they really, they can sense when they're not getting the straight information, and then, you know, then how are they ever going to trust? And you really need that. You really need that trust to get to the best outcome. Sometimes we do that just because we don't want to have the difficult conversation.
Exactly. Yes, very much.
My experience is that the children have so much courage, and their spirit is so positive and optimistic. And many times they're in situations where they're more worried about their parents. And what's happening with them. And if you're not able to share information in an honest way, it creates these false divides that make it difficult to pull together to get to the right place.
Okay, well, look, on that inspiring note, I'm going to draw it to a close. Thanks very much for talking to us today. It's been a great opportunity to hear how things look from a surgeon's point of view, and discuss all those ways of better supporting children and families at a time of immense stress. So, yeah, thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you, Robin. And, you know, that's talking with you, it reminds me of why I wrote the book, Healing Children, because I wanted to empower parents with the things that I've learned over 30 years of being a surgeon and now a CEO of a children's hospital, about all of the special medicine, the incredible stories that I've seen. But it's really to empower parents to get the best for their children. And so I thank you for the opportunity to talk about the book. All of the proceeds will go to research for children. And it's just been a tremendous opportunity for me to share what I've learned over the years. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you very much, Kurt.
It's so refreshing to hear such a senior figure in children's medicine talking in such a caring, compassionate and patient-centered way about his work. I'm hoping we can get Dr. Newman over to lead a seminar on childhood cancers in the not too distant future, so he can bring some of his leadership style to our shores. As usual, there are links to material from today's show on the Yes to Life website. Just click the Yes to Life show logo on the homepage at yestolife.org.uk. Our book, The Cancer Revolution, by Patricia Peat and 37 other expert contributors, is about to be reprinted. We're absolutely delighted at its success and to know that so many people are benefiting from the wealth of knowledge in there. If you haven't seen it yet, go to thecancerrevolution.co.uk, and while you're there, do check out the video shop, where recordings of our last year's annual conference are available to download. A massive thank you to our three brilliant speakers at last Saturday's Brighton seminar. That's Dr. Andre Young-Snell, Elaine Godley and Dr. Britt Cordy. It was a great success. Another edition of the Yes to Life newsletter is about to go out, so if you're not already subscribed, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and pop your email address in the sign-up box on the homepage. Keep up with me, Robin Daly, and with Yes to Life during the week on social media, that's Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And please join me again next week when my guest will be medical herbalist Claudia Manchanda. Goodbye. Thank you.